This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley. Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. I am so grateful you're here. Today, you might learn something that helps someone in your life. You may learn something that helps you in an emergency situation. You may think about things you never thought of before as we speak to a social worker, Brandy Martinez. Good morning, Brandy.
Good morning.
You know, it's funny. I used to work on the radio every single day for many years. And when I did, I knew everything that was going on. You know, like I knew what the weather was going to be. I knew things like, you know, who's nominated for a Grammy, when the Super Bowl is, Groundhog's Day. Now that I'm not on the radio every day, I've missed everything. I miss Groundhog's Day. I miss the Super Bowl, believe it or not. I miss the Grammys. And then one of my work wives, Jillian Lebarski, said to me, "Hey, do you know that March is National Social Workers Month?" And I'm like, "No, I don't know anything, but I'm grateful to know that I can have enough time to celebrate Social Workers Month." And she said, "Why don't you speak to Brandy Martinez at St. Christopher's Inn?" And that is what led us to today. Did you know it was National Social Workers Month in March?
I did.
You did? Is this something you celebrate?
So often we don't celebrate it, but we are aware of it every year.
Wow. How long have you been a social worker?
I have been a social worker since 2021.
2021. What year is
it? Yes, I graduated school.
Okay. Yeah. Lots and lots of school, correct?
Yes.
How much? Tell us about that.
So I got my master's degree in 2021. So it takes some time, you know, to officially, you know, you have to get your master's. After that, you need a lot of clinical hours. You get two licenses after that. So it's pretty time consuming.
Yeah, it's a big mountain to climb.
It is.
So yes, let's celebrate Social Workers Month. I'll tell you a funny story. In senior year of high school, I had to meet with the guidance counselor. Honestly, it was the first time I'd laid eyes on her. I barely participated in high school. So she said, you know, it's time for you to start thinking about your future and if you want to go to college and what you want to do with your life. And I said, "I think I want to help people. I want to be a social worker." And she looked at me without missing a beat. She was already shaking her head no. And she says, Oh, no, Casey. I can tell you're the kind of person who would take this work home with you. That wouldn't be a good field for you. You should think of something else." And for many, many years, I believed that she looked into my soul at that moment and saw who I was. But now it dawns on me, she wasn't looking at my soul. She was looking at my scores, my SATs. And she's like, "Honey, you're never going to make it. You should be like a counter worker, not a social worker." But isn't that funny that in my youth, I thought about it?
Yeah, it's not necessarily easy, but, you know, I think you over time figure out how to leave it, especially here on the mountain.
Yeah, how to leave it. Okay, so let's mention that. Brandy said, "Here on the mountain." As you may know, I work on the mountain, the Holy Mountain at Graymore. I'm up on the top of the mountain in the retreats department, and Brandy is in the middle of the mountain, really in the heart of the mountain at St. Christopher's Inn, which I'm going to let you describe what St. Christopher's Inn is. I've been aware of it my whole life because I've been local, but it's always been a little bit mysterious too, because the people in the inn are very much protected. So describe to everybody where you work.
So St. Christopher's Inn is an addiction treatment residential center where, you know, we serve a population of men. And it's a wonderful place that the friars run for over 100 years.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about it. In the early years of Graymore, when Father Paul and Mother Lorena were establishing, you know, their Society of the At-One-ment or Society of the Atonement and building the mountain. The mountain was there. They were building the roads and buildings. Men wandered off the street as I've been told, and the friars put them to work. And they found that many of these men were homeless, and in time they found that many of these men were addicts. And so St. Christopher's Inn was born. You know, the friars' mission appeared at the friars and sisters' mission appeared at their feet, which was, you know, help people. And St. Christopher's Inn was born over 127 years ago or something like that. And I've heard, too, that St. Christopher's Inn, the actual building, has been built four times over the years because it's gotten so much bigger. But the funny thing is, Brandy, you know, we work on the same mountain. I have only been in St. Christopher's Inn once in my whole life. I met somebody, another coworker there for lunch, but I just got into the dining room. I haven't been in the building because, as I mentioned, the men of St. Christopher's Inn, or Brothers Christopher, as we call them, are protected, right? If they're there to heal, it's like unseen forces, just sort of unseen forces, keep them in the inn and sheltered and cared for. So as much as, have we met, by the way, like in real life?
I don't think so.
I don't think we've ever met.
That's one of the things about the mountain is, you know, many of us never actually get to meet in person. We're kind of in our own little silos here.
Right. Right.
We're very busy. Yeah. You know, that's most people actually don't even know St. Christopher's Inn is here.
I know.
People drive past it all the time. I'm actually from the area, and I always knew about Graymore, but I never knew about St. Christopher's Inn.
Right. And that's the t-shirt I want to get made and sell in Bonnie's bookstore. You know, I drove past it a million times, right? And then it just takes that one time to drive up the mountain, and you're welcome to drive up the mountain. Not to go to St. Christopher's Inn, but you can visit the Sisters gift shop. You can visit the thrift store that supports the inn. You can visit the bookstore and all the chapels, and you can even stay for a weekend retreat, and you can call me for that. But we're talking about Brandy's work today and the work that a social worker does. Now, when you were preparing, what made you choose this field?
So initially, when I first went into social work, I wasn't sure that, I wanted to be a social worker. I didn't know what kind of social worker I wanted to be. So that was really what was interesting about it. I just so happened to fall into St. Christopher's Inn. I was placed here. This was my field placement as an intern. I wasn't sure what I was walking into when I came here, but I came and I never left. Actually, I interned here. I fell in love with the population. I really enjoyed, you know, the work. I enjoyed the addiction and mental health field. I love to see, you know, how meaningful and the impact that in the work we do really has to see someone walk in so broken and through the process of the, you know, the rehabilitation they do here, to see the change in them, to see them stand in front of the room, you know, from the way they walked in to the way they leave. You know, it's an amazing experience, you know, for them to really go back and re-enter, you know, their life, you know, and really just rebuild and stabilize themselves to, you know, start over.
Yeah. Oh, you told that story so beautifully. I have tears in my eyes. And there's something about the Brothers Christopher, the men at the inn, that many of us sort of whisper about because I don't know. It's really hard to put into words, but it's this: being near these men who are striving to be better, it moves me and fuels me in a way I can't describe. It touches something very deep, and it makes me more hopeful for my own existence. And, you know, I'm wildly applauding them in my heart in the brief moments that I get to be with these men, our Brothers Christopher, and that's riding the elevator, you know, up to the fourth floor where some of them work in the dining room. I don't often even get to know their names because they're just there for a short time. But we smile at each other and, you know, make small talk. Just being near them makes me filled with, I can't even put it into words, but something positive. And I think it's at the basis of humanity is that when we strip away everything else, we're all trying our best, you know, and their striving is just a little more visible. I don't know. I'm not making any sense, but I
No, it's very true. I mean, in many aspects of social work, you don't actually get to see, you know, your clinical work ultimately see the change in the end. You know, you do the work, and oftentimes that's all you see is that in the moment. You don't actually see the follow through. So that's what's really nice about this work, is you can see the actual effects it has on someone. You can see the actual, you know, stability, the strength that they gain from it. There's a lot that,
yeah, you can feel it.
There's, yeah.
We're talking to Brandy Martinez. She is a social worker. Actually, you're more than a social worker. You are the director of counseling at St. Christopher's Inn.
Yes.
How many counselors do you have under you?
Currently, we have 9.
Wow. You're the boss?
Yes.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I like that. It's
That's a big job, Brandy. All right. I want to leave the men at the inn on the mountain, and let's get off the mountain and let's just talk about clinical things that can help other people. How do you handle a client who comes into you aggressive or resistant or depressed or conflicted? Like, you see people at their worst. What's tool number one?
We always have to assess a situation. That's really the most important thing when someone comes in, whether it be aggressive, depressed, suicidal. You know, we have to see, you know, self-harm, what's going on, right? It's always a crisis protocol, basically. You know, what risk is present for them? We have to remain calm. You know, we kind of have to be that regulated presence for them, you know, try and de-escalate a situation and see what's going on, be the grounding presence for them. See, you know, assume there's a trauma history there. That's pretty much our initial, you know, go-to when someone comes in, you know, is a trauma-informed approach, because there obviously is something going on. It's likely a trauma history that has initiated this. It's a response, whether they're coming from, say, you know, institutionalized background, you know, they could have a history of abuse. You know, we don't necessarily know, and they're not necessarily going to tell us in that moment.
Right.
The stabilizing presence.
Right. Yeah, they don't. I would assume most people who are seated in front of a social worker or a clinician don't come in and say, well, here's why I'm like this, right?
Exactly. Whatever they're going through, we want to, you know, kind of avoid the power struggle with them.
Yeah.
Kind of allow them to be, you know, be present with them in their emotion, you know, validate how they're feeling and their ambivalence to being with us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Allow them to, you know, say how they're feeling, be present with them, you know, go through that emotion with them and kind of avoid any confrontation. Just the second you kind of demand anything or say, oh, we're not going to do this, you've lost them.
Do you have like a panic button or something that you could push if things get a little out of hand?
So we do have, I mean, we have security here, but oftentimes we try to de-escalate as much as possible. We don't oftentimes have a physical risk.
Yeah.
It doesn't usually get to that, but we do have, you know, panic alarms if needed.
Gotcha.
It doesn't usually get to that, though. But yes, we do absolutely have that in place if necessary.
Yeah. Okay. I want to say this about something you said earlier about assume there was a trauma background. Is that what you said?
Yes, that there is a trauma history. Yes.
Assume that there's a trauma history. I would like to say to all the world, when you meet anyone, assume there is a trauma history. In all the work I've done with women and throughout the years, I've only met one woman, and she stands out in my mind, who was like, yeah, I didn't have any of that growing up. She's great, and I'm thrilled. But I think just on a human level, can we all just assume there's a trauma history?
Yeah.
Please? Right.
Chances are someone's experienced something.
Yeah. Chances are.
Fear of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just be present in that. That will tend to de-escalate a situation.
Yeah.
Allowing someone to go through the emotions they're feeling rather than try to stop them or just immediately calm them and take it from. Let them go through it.
Right. That's one thing we do at my women's retreats that I do off the mountain.
Yep.
It's one of my opening statements is, if you see a woman sitting in the circle and she starts to cry uncontrollably, please let her. She may have waited her entire life for these tears. Please let her feel what she's feeling. Don't try to fix it. It's hard.
I always say, don't give them a tissue either.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. You know, I also run the grief group here, and I'm like, I don't even bring tissues, because I feel like that interrupts the emotion. And you've now, if someone happens to have a tissue, they can give it to them, you know, they can grab it themselves. But when you offer someone something, you've now stopped what they're going through because you've interrupted that emotion.
Sorry, I could have been a social worker. Darn it. No.
Yes, you could have been.
Honestly, I don't have the capacity to hold space like you do. I volunteer at a food pantry, and I see things that take my breath away. Not a lot, but there are issues with some people who, you know, it's not easy to come to a food pantry, right?
Right.
Assume trauma history. There have been things that happened, and my response, and all the other volunteers know this, when Casey has left the room, something's going down because I can't handle it. I know I'm going to say the wrong thing. I know I'm going to do the wrong thing. In that particular situation, I get so nervous that I step aside, and then somebody will see, oh, right? And they'll step in, and they, I don't know why, they could just handle it better than me. I can't in that moment hold it all. And I just want to say the training that you've received is magnificent, but there's also got to be a piece of you, right? That's very strong, that's able to support this. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think over time you kind of gain that, because initially it's not the easiest. You know, it takes a lot not to be that bleeding heart for someone, because you just are like, oh my gosh, you know, you, and over time you kind of gain that strength over time to really realize where someone's at, what they've been through, have a better understanding, and even being able to ground yourself in the process.
Right. What kind of advice did you get, you know, as you were going through all your schooling? Is there a phrase or a word or an instance that stands out like, that was really helpful?
You know, the funny thing is, when I was in school, I wouldn't say I had any particular professor that really gave me advice, because everything was really specific to the courses we took. And it wasn't so much to the clinical work we were doing. But I would say, in my internship here, and I worked under Kevin Douglas, who was our old director here. And I would say all of my training under Kevin was really probably the best thing for me. Between Kevin and, you know, Tracy, who used to work here, that was probably the best thing for me, was just watching them model. And it was really like, play the part you want. That's how I looked at it. And I still say that to the day, you know, to today. And I tell others that, is seeing how they handled situations, you know, seeing how they worked with the men. And so it wasn't so much advice, but it was almost kind of like what we tell the men, progress, not perfection, right? Over time, it was exactly that for me. It was each day I learned something, and I was able to apply it based off of how I saw them respond to situations. And although I'm not exactly them, I'm my own, right? In this world that I have here, but I really gained my tools in this, you know, position as my own, but I learned it really from them and seeing them model. So it wasn't really one particular thing or a phrase or suggestion. It just was really watching those that I kind of idolized in the field and model the way they did things.
Yeah.
That I gained so much from.
And to all the Kevins, did you say Kevin?
Yes.
To all the Kevins and Tracys in the world, that's how you live forever, man. That's how you live forever, right? Like, they had no idea probably that they were influencing you the way that they did.
Probably not in the moment. Yeah.
But the way they worked is now in you, and it's incorporated into the way you work. Brandy Martinez is our guest. You know, March is National Social Workers Month. And we are celebrating because they bring so much good into the world. You're like boots on the ground healers. What are some of the ethical dilemmas that might pop up that people like me would never think of?
There could be, you know, transference. That can always pop up, you know, a situation that, you know, is going on with a client that is something that, you know, directly has affected you in your life that you see in them that might be a struggle that you possibly have been through. You know, that sometimes could be something that could pop up for someone and you're not sure how you're going to handle it because you've been through it and you're having, you know, a specific emotion about it. You know, that might be something you would get supervision over because you've been affected by it. And how can I give someone, you know, how can I assist someone if this is something I've personally struggled with because I might not handle it the right way or help them work through it properly if I myself maybe have not worked through it properly or am currently going through it.
Wow. You have to have so much self-awareness so you don't bring your stuff into their room.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. I'd be like, oh, I've been through that. Let me tell you how I fixed myself.
You don't ever want to bring anything personal. You know, you don't ever share anything personal with one of your clients.
I don't know how you do that. Tell me what that feels like.
To keep your personal things personal?
Yes.
I mean, I feel like it. For me, it's not really that difficult. I don't think I ever really struggled too much with that because I think it, you know, it's one of those things I've always wanted to keep separate. Mm-hmm. But I think there are circumstances that do come up where you think, oh, I know someone who's been through that. I can talk about that. But you try the advice maybe you'd want to give. Like this work isn't about advice, right? It's not about someone's situation that might have worked for them. So it might work for this person. That's not the way this works. Right? Someone has to figure out how to work through their situations. You're assisting and guiding them, but you shouldn't be telling them how to do it. And what works for one person doesn't work for another. It's not like a cookie cutter kind of thing.
Right. I love that. This job isn't about advice. Wowza. So, okay, got it. It's not about advice. What's it about?
It's really about guidance. It's about someone sets goals for themselves while they're here, right? They might have, whether it, you know, it be trauma or reconnecting with family. It's really about you assisting in what their goals are and help guiding them in that direction and what they believe their needs are and helping them reach those goals. But they are, you know, they're the author of their own story.
Do you ever come across the situation where you're working with someone and you feel they're not going in the right direction? They're not choosing the best goals. Does that ever come into play?
All the time. All the time. And, you know, you can sit with them and you can discuss that with them. I know that you, you know, decided you wanted to work on A, B, C, D, right? But, you know, how is this going to benefit you? What makes this different than other times, right? That you've been, say, in a program, right? What are you going to do different this time? Because this looks very similar to what you've done before and had that work out for you, right? What do you want to do different? If you don't want to do this again, right? You say you don't want to do this. You don't want to keep going back into a program. You want to, you know, go back home to your children. Is this going to get you there?
Right.
It's all about that conversation, maybe open-ended questions, getting them to think differently without telling them, you know, the answers or what you want them to think, getting, you know, kind of the wheels turning on their own.
Brandy Martinez is our guest. She's teaching us about the field of social work, which has been very enlightening for me. I am so grateful that you are you and you are doing what you're doing on the Holy Mountain. How? Let me tell you this. I realized when I started work on the Holy Mountain, I was never going to get a day off. Not for a very long time. So I bought myself a hot tub. It's like, all right, if I'm going to work 7 days a week, I'm going to get in the hot tub at the end of the day. What are you doing to take care of you? Because my brain is exhausted just listening to the depth of work that you do. How do you take care of you?
How do I take care of me? I mean, I'm very busy outside of here. So I most of the time leave work and go do sports with my children, So I would say on my off time from here, which is like you said, we're never really off, but it's really just family time. I feel like that is in theory my self-care. You know, I enjoy being with them, and you know, I get my nails done for me. That's my what I do for me. So anybody around here who knows me, I've got some wild nails.
That's
So,
great.
but yeah, I'm a big family person. Like I really enjoy my family time. So whenever I can get that in, I feel like that really does help me relax, even though I'm going with them. But I enjoy that time, being able to watch their sports and be as present as I can during that time.
Beautiful. Brenda Martinez, that's fabulous. I can't wait to meet you one day and see your beautiful nails. And if you ever need to like chill, come on over in the hot tub. It would be great to see you. I'm just so grateful for all you do. Is there any thought you want to share? Just a final thought about what you'd like people to know about your work?
Just how important it is, and that, you know, asking for help, there's no shame in it. You know, everyone needs someone. And if you feel like you can't, you know, reach out to someone you know, reach out to someone you don't know. You know, that's why there's therapists, there's social workers, there's LMHCs. You know, get help. It's the most important thing you can do. Your mental health matters. You know, everyone struggles with something. And if someone says they don't, they'd be lying to you. And there's no shame.
Amen. Amen, Brandy. Can you hear my cat at all?
No.
She's been vocalizing. And I wanted to tell Frankenberry back at the studio that last night before I went to bed, I wrote out like a bunch of questions and ideas I wanted to talk to you about. And then I got in bed and I heard Beatrice, the cat, ripping up the paper on the dining room table. Like chewing it and tearing it. And I knew she was having a good time, so I didn't even stop her. I know, Frankenberry, you can relate to that.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely relate to that. My Bella can certainly relate to that and give high paws there to the Beatrice. Hello again, Orange Cat. Yeah, Bella, sometimes she'll get that wild cat hair up her, you know, furry cat butt, and all of a sudden, she'll just start attacking the crunchy paper that I've got laid out on the floor. Now, for those of you who may not know, the crunchy paper, as my sister and I refer to it, is the hard brown paper that comes packed into boxes that what you then do is you lay it out kind of flat, you put some catnip on it, and possibly throw a little catnipped mouse on top, and you let the cats go to town. My Bella, she loves the crunchy paper. She can roll around on the crunchy paper for hours. And when I look at her kind of weirdly, she looks at me and says, "What have you done for me lately?" That lady that lives upstairs that comes down this way sometimes to give me a scratch on the top of the head, you know what? She apparently orders a lot of stuff online. And that stuff online comes packed with this stuff that I'm laying on right now. But what have you, sir, Mr. Man, done for me lately? I'm the one that grabbed the paper there, Bella, and laid it on the floor for you to roll around on, and sprinkled the catnip on, and bought you the furry little mice that I also sprinkled catnip on for you then to roll around and fight with like it said something about your mom. Oh, okay then, Mr. Man, point taken. Now go away. I'm busy.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Brandy. I wish you a very happy Social Workers Month.
Thank you.
I think they should make it 2 or 3 months out of the year. You deserve it.
Thank you so much. Every month is our month, so we appreciate it.
Shine on.